This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. And we'll let you know the first part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive. And they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. For a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street. They have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves in the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle. And we have a really, really special guest on today. Actually, when I was doing the commercial for Stan, who happens to be my cousin, Ellen Buckner was looking at me, and I was getting a little bit nervous because she's a true professional. She's a teacher of music and has performed with many symphonies across the world. And currently working directly with the Murfreesboro Symphony. And it has got to be a labor of love, and I was telling you that earlier, with what you guys do, because there are just a few of you that are making sure that this pleasure of enjoyment for the community comes from just a very few people.
Right.
But it's not easy to put on.
No.
And I've talked to Joseph Lee, of course, and he has explained in great detail how much pressure there is to be able to use this gift to the community, but it's not cheap.
No, it isn't. It costs about $25,000 per concert, mm-hmm. and the tickets don't even begin to cover it. So we rely on people's support, mm-hmm. the public support, grants, foundations, mm-hmm. Auctions. We're going to have an auction and a run, you mm-hmm. know, anything to raise money for the symphony. Because it's expensive, and the biggest expense, of course, are the players. And they're mostly union players, so they have to get union scale pay. And we have about 55 in the orchestra for each concert.
Hmm.
Now, the last concert, the Christmas concert, we had a small orchestra for the Handel's Messiah, mm-hmm. because unlike the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, Handel originally had 32 players in the orchestra and 32 in the chorus.
Hmm.
So Mormon Tabernacle Choir would be a lot smaller then. But Mozart, that was about the size of Mozart's time, too.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they didn't have the bassoon, didn't have the bass clarinet and the tenor clarinets. You know, a lot of instruments were not in Mozart and Handel's and Haydn's orchestras, mm-hmm. because they just weren't invented then. But it's usually about 55, and that's about... We had more than that when we were at Tucker, but... our concerts now are in the First United Methodist Church, and about 55 is about all we can get up there.
I see that you have done a lot of teaching to younger people to educate them as to classical music, and especially in elementary, which surprises me on up. But before I get any farther, I want to ask you a question. I have always heard that if you play classical music, and we were talking, believe it or not, at the City Cafe about this before I came over here. Yeah. And if you play classical music to a young child, it makes them brighter, quicker, and makes them accept things better musically than others.
Especially Mozart.
Mozart is the one.
Dolly Parton and Governor Bredesen had a program where they sent CDs to pregnant women. And they played Mozart music, especially Mozart. And also it's been tested and proven that if you listen to Mozart music the night before a test, you do better on the test.
Now, if there are a lot of young people listening right now, there's going to be a run on Mozart
music.
That's
right. Get a Mozart piano sonata.
That's amazing. Now, you got started in your education in New Mexico.
No, I'm from Atlantic, Iowa.
Okay.
And I started on the French horn when I was in sixth grade.
Oh, okay.
They had an excellent band program, still do.
Uh-huh.
And so they would send quartets around to each of the elementary schools, and I fell in love with the French horn sound. I didn't realize that it weighed more than I did, and carrying it to and from school was kind of bad, especially in the winter when it's 25 below zero. But and then my brother played trombone from the same program, and I had scholarships in college on the trombone, on the French horn and voice, and he had scholarships with the trombone and voice. So that's how my love of music started.
Now, did somebody give me some bad information? I heard you went to school
in New Mexico.
In New Mexico. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And you received your bachelor and your master's degree there. And see, that shows you a poor old country bumpkin like me. I didn't realize that they gave scholarships like that across the country. Are there many universities that actually will accept scholarships in music
like
you have at your level?
Oh, yes. In Iowa, they had, at the time, I think they still do, competitions, and you start in the town, and then the county, and then sub-state, and then state. And so I won a one rating in the state for a vocal song I did, and so that gave me a scholarship.
And you're a full soprano.
Yes.
That is, to me, the two best types of music are sung by tenors and sopranos. It just seems like there's just something really special about that. You'll be interested. I was watching an old movie the other night, and it was about Enrico Caruso.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever seen it or not, but it's about through a young girl's eyes, and she was a Quaker, and she was not supposed to talk to strangers or meet anybody on the train. She was taking a long train ride. And she met Enrico Caruso and got to sit in his car, and they discussed many things at the time. And actually, while the train ride was going on, of course, he wasn't alive, but his music was. And they played his music, which is just unbelievable. It just reaches down and grabs your spine and just twists it all around.
I have Mario Lanza on.
Who played him.
Who played Caruso, but I also have a recording of him singing Caruso's arias. And, I mean, he had a real soul in his voice, just like Pavarotti, you know.
Well, for some reason, I thought Caruso had more range than Pavarotti. It seemed like it, at least by my ear.
Well, Pavarotti did this Daughters of the Regiment, and he had 10 high C's in it that he popped off when he was younger. And I think Caruso probably did the same role.
Can you? I know that you have to be born with that talent, but teaching someone how to sing, does that bring more out of them and teach? What do you actually teach somebody of your level and their level to be able to get everything out of your voice that you want to?
Pretty much. The basic thing is breathing.
Oh, really?
Breathing and support. And I've had some high school students that have really, it takes a while. People don't realize that a young girl's voice changes too. It doesn't change as dramatically as the male voice, but it changes. And I've had some high school students, one of them from Smithville, Chase Farrell, who developed a beautiful tenor voice, and he started with me when his voice was changing, which is kind of funny, but it's not, because they can't help it. Their voice just squeaks out.
Well, you know, I thought that was normal. When I sing in the shower, what the notes I want to hit, they seem to go somewhere else.
Down the drain.
Right down the drain. You're exactly right. Boom, it's gone. Now, you have private lessons that you give.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you have someone come in that has really a special gift, a talent,
you praise God.
Yeah.
Because some of them don't.
Now, how do you deal with that? You have someone that really wants to be an entertainer, a singer, but yet they really don't have the talent.
Well, I would be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had parents and grandparents call me and say, my granddaughter is 8 years old. She wants to take singing lessons. And I always say, well, her voice is going to change anyway. Why don't you get her on a wind instrument?
Mm-hmm.
That way they learn how to breathe. They learn to sight read. Singers are notoriously bad sight readers. And so that way when their voice does develop so they can start taking voice lessons, they already have their breathing down that is natural, and they can read music because a singer reads vertically. A pianist reads horizontally.
Wow.
Because a singer just reads one line.
Mm-hmm.
A pianist reads four lines.
But they have to meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I saw, thinking about you, I saw a young girl on public television a couple weeks ago.
Ivanko?
That was her.
Jackie.
Jackie Ivanko. How in the world? You look at her, and she's still a young girl.
11 or 12.
Yeah, but it comes out just like a full soprano. How
mm-hmm.
in the world? Do you think that was a natural flow for her?
I do. Now, when she sings the O mio bambino caro, it's transposed down. She's not singing it in the original key. But it blew me. She has a CD out, and she's doing Nessun Dorma, which is the tenor aria from Turandot. And I thought, why would her teacher let her do that aria? It's very demanding, and she does it too low. But I don't understand why they would program that on a CD for her.
What would you do with her if you had her?
Just hug her.
I mean, she talks just like a little girl.
I
when
know
she's
she does, and she's been on the Today Show with Kathy Lee Gifford and mm-hmm. Hoda Kotb, and she acts like a normal 12-year-old.
Yeah. But yet when she performs in concert,
she's like a pro.
Yeah. You sit there in amazement and just listen and close your eyes and just, you can imagine someone that has been in the business for a long
mm-hmm.
time just letting it flow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that she will get better as she gets older as a rule from that age?
Well, I think her voice will stretch, so she won't have to have the songs transposed.
Hmm.
But she has to be careful. Do you remember there was a singer, Charlotte Church,
mm-hmm.
5 or 6 years
mm-hmm.
ago, mm-hmm. she developed a real bad habit of her tongue wiggling when she was singing, which is tension.
Oh.
That's not good. Or somebody's bottom jaw moving up and down while they're singing. That's tension. So,
is that trying to get more out? Is that what you're doing? Or are you fighting it? Or what?
I don't know, because I don't do that.
You were just natural, see?
I don't know. I started out as a mezzo.
Okay, that's just under mm-hmm. soprano. And then as you got along, then the voice
mm-hmm.
improved into
mm-hmm.
a soprano. Because I have heard both. But if you get a true soprano that has a song that really reaches out a lot of range, there is nothing prettier. I mean, absolutely nothing. Have you actually sung here? Have you done any singing in Murfreesboro, any of the concerts?
No.
Have you retired?
Mm-hmm. I have. I've had my day in the sun.
But you enjoyed it.
Oh, yes. Loved it.
When a person is watching an opera for the first time and they love the sound of music, is it important for them to know what's going on in that opera where it's telling the story? Is that important Or is it more important just to enjoy the music?
Well, I think I have to know the story. When I was doing opera, I translated everything so that I knew the exact word to emphasize, either volume-wise or technique-wise. So I need to know the story. And when I lived in Chattanooga, we had a, I started a program called Operas Tell Stories. Mm-hmm. And we had a dress rehearsal on Thursday night, and then Friday night was the dark night when the theater was closed, and Saturday was the performance. And Friday night, we would meet in a home, and I would have the story already prepared and excerpts on a cassette, and we'd take a little intermission and then finish. And it would be about 2 hours. And by the time they got to the opera Saturday night, they knew exactly what was going on. And I think that helps people understand. Now, Chattanooga has the translators on the back of the seats like they do at the Met. So if a song, if an opera's in Italian, they've got the English subtitles there to see or up above the stage. So,
why do you think that, especially down here in the South, and of course Murfreesboro is not a an extremely large town. It's not. But the arts seem to be really reaching up in this community, and people are enjoying the arts a lot more, and like Chattanooga. Why do you think that the South seems to be moving a lot toward that particular type of entertainment?
Well, I think maybe television, PBS, you know, it's available to anybody who wants to turn on TV, and the Metropolitan still has their Saturday broadcasts and
that's a
movies.
Song.
That's Gene Kelly singing in the rain.
Yeah.
I don't know how to turn my cell phone off, so you don't have to listen to it.
Just let it go. Actually, it's pretty music. Speaking of that, and we're talking about a local girl. You know, Judy Garland, people were from here. And she had one of the most fantastic voices I've ever heard. And I have been told that she never had to do a retake on any of her songs.
That's
she just
what I've
absolutely
heard.
Hit it every time.
That's what I've heard.
And you know, in the movie The Wizard of Oz, they were going to take that song out, Over the Rainbow. I couldn't imagine that.
I couldn't either.
But she'd hit it one time. And that was it. At her age, it was just some people just have an innate talent that you can't mess with.
I
mean, it's just there. Now, what you do here now, and we'll get back to the symphony here. You're a librarian in the symphony with the group here.
I am.
And a lot of people would say, "Well, I didn't know they had books and stuff like that over there." But that's not what you do.
No, the musicians do not furnish their own music. The symphony does. And 2 weeks before each concert, all of the musicians are to have their music in their hands so they can practice on it before the first dress rehearsal. And so my job is to get all the music out and copied and mail out to each orchestra member so that when they come to the first dress rehearsal, they're prepared. And then after the concert, I pick up the music, a friend and I do, and then it has to go back in the folders in the file cabinet. So it's a 2 week process before. And this time we did something unusual. We scanned the music and I emailed the music to everybody, which saves a lot of time and an awful lot of money. Postage is very expensive. Then we have a production manager, and he makes sure the stage is ready, the chairs are there, the stands are up, the stand lights are on and working, and then he has to take all that down. Then we have a personnel director who contracts the symphony players, and then I'm the librarian, and we have an office manager, Fran Campbell, and so it's a staff that works.
Now, how in the world are you able to reach out and take care of all the expenses? I mean, we were talking about some of the other things that you're doing, the grants and things like that, but as a community, is Murfreesboro doing all that it needs to do to make sure that we're able to keep the symphony here? Because it's, I tell you what, it's just as good as any place you'll ever go. It really is. That's, we have some really great artists here.
We have, well, our players for Mac Frampton. Mm-hmm. They came in at 3 o'clock, got the music, sight read it, and then played the concert at 7:30 that night.
And I was there, and they didn't miss a beat.
They didn't. We just have fabulous musicians in that symphony.
How much time does... it doesn't matter, I don't guess, which instrument they play. How much time would a person that actually is at that level, how much time would they have to put in every day to be able to maintain?
It depends. The strings more than the brass and winds, mm-hmm. because they play on almost everything. Mm-hmm. And when we did the Messiah, they just, there's a lot of music. There were 16 pages that they had to play mm-hmm. in the Messiah, and some of it goes lickety-split.
Hmm.
So they, and Tchaikovsky is one that is a little tricky for the strings. So I wouldn't know how many hours a day, but I know Stefan and Mary Alice Roseland, she's a violist, I know they spend hours.
Your experience is extensive, and you spent some time in Europe, actually in Germany.
Yes.
How was that?
Wonderful.
I bet it was.
We lived in Bad Tölz, which is south of Munich, for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Then moved to Heidelberg, mm-hmm. and then my husband was in Vietnam, and we came back and went right back to Heidelberg, mm-hmm. and then West Berlin. So we were in three of the best places in Germany. Bavaria is so scenic, you know, and Heidelberg is too. It was not bombed during World War II. It was an open city, so it wasn't destroyed. And, of course, the student prince's house is right across the river.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved the culture. Of course, my grandmother's German, my grandfather, and... I loved the culture, and the scenery was gorgeous, and the food was wonderful.
And they love that type of music. They
yes.
love opera. They really do. Do you feel a little bit more stress when you're singing before people that know a little bit more about what you're actually doing and have so many great performers have witnessed?
No, I was nervous every time. So.
Oh.
Except when I'm doing opera, because you're in costume and you have scenery and you have staging and all that, and so you become that person, so you forget that there's an audience out there.
Makes it better when you're playing a part?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A lot more fun.
I thought it'd be more difficult. Well, we're going to take a quick break from Ellen and let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And Melissa Warren started this business, and she saw a particular need for, as you get older, or maybe you've had some physical problems and can no longer take care of the duties in your home, they come in and they do that for you 24/7, and they even run errands for you. So if you've reached that stage of your life or maybe having some particular problems right now, give them a call at 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com.
Did you get storm damage from the hailstorm? If you're not familiar with the process, making an insurance claim due to the recent hailstorm might seem confusing. Matthew H. from North Murfreesboro said, quote, Millennium Roofing has a certified insurance adjuster on staff. They insisted on being present when our adjuster examined our home. Now that's what I call service, end quote. Millennium Roofing is a local family-owned company and has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Millennium Roofing and Construction, 525-6725 or millenniumroofingtn.com.
This state representative Mike Sparks. Please come out and join Sheriff Arnold and myself for I Shot with the Sheriff event and Chili Cook-Off this Saturday, 11:30, 8000 Burleson Lane, just off Old Nashville Highway. Tickets only $50 with a portion benefiting area food banks. Come out for a fun event. All you can eat chili. Bring your own pistol. This state representative Mike Sparks. Love to see you this weekend for I Shot with the Sheriff event. For more information, call 525-3198.
Paid for by citizens to elect Mike Sparks, Preston Sparks Treasurer.
Smoked wings, barbecue, the redneck nachos, you know what I'm talking about. It's Kirk and Burt Smokehouse Grill on Kaysen Lane. Stop on in. Each day they've got great specials for you. Kirk and Burt Smokehouse Grill on Kaysen Lane here in Murfreesboro.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS. The Omni Hut Restaurant is Frenna and Americare Pest Control.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Polly Walls, what sets Omni Hut apart from other restaurants?
Consistency, service, atmosphere. We've been fortunate with a staff that's stayed in place. So you get to know your customers, and we're feeding third, fourth, fifth generation in some families now.
Catch the Aloha spirit at the Omni Hut.
Locally owned and operated since 1960. Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
Let's look ahead and see what's happening in our community. If you love musicals, Guys and Dolls is showing through January the 22nd at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. For more information, call the Center for the Arts at 904-ARTS. And now through January the 14th, you're encouraged to recycle those Christmas trees. Be sure to take the tinsels and decorations off, and if you live in Murfreesboro, put them right there on the curb or take them over to the farmer's market. The drop-off point for listeners in the Smyrna area is the Lee Victory Park. Once again, this is now through January the 14th. Make those New Year's resolutions to get fit and lose weight come true. Right now, through the end of the month, buy your tickets to SportsCom and the Patterson Community Center at 25% off. You better hurry. That's through the end of this month only. You need to make a note of this. On Saturday, January the 14th, a Celtic band concert at the Barfield Crescent Park. And it's free. The Secret Commonwealth performs. The gates open at 5:30 and the music starts at 6:30. That's Saturday, January 14th at the Barfield Crescent Park. And we say thank you to the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department for this great service. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
It's the Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Ellen Buckner. And we want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection, 2568 South Church Street. And that's beside Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministry and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly are the owners. And they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. And they have a vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners at the Gold and Coin Connection. That's at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. And Ellen, part of your history is in the military.
Yes.
And I can relate to some of that. And mostly a lot of it was at Fort Benning and Fort Bragg. We talked about that. And of course, some overseas during that particular time. And I see that you were quite active at Fort Benning. You had a women's choir.
Oh, yeah.
And all those things that kind of helped entertain the people there.
Mm-hmm. We did a lot of singing downtown and a lot of singing on the post.
Uh-huh.
And whenever they wanted free entertainment, they called the Benning Bells.
Were you kind of like the USO or something?
Yeah.
Like that? Wow.
But we really did, the 2 years I was there, we did maybe 30, 40 programs a year. And then we sang at Christmas in the hospital and, mm-hmm. you know, all around. And it was fun. I had a good group.
Now, where did you find these talented ladies down there?
Word of mouth.
And were most of them Army wives?
Fort Benning, they all were. Wow. Now, I had another group in Tampa at MacDill Air Force Base, and some of the women were retired and some just civilians that the other wives brought in. So, good group.
Well, tell me, during part of this time, Vietnam was going on. And most of us remember, especially those that were in the service or whatever, that it was not very popular with the people here. I mean, you got all these guys and gals out there that were just giving everything that they could. And I have still yet to understand why at least the public should have supported those GIs better than what they did. And I know from a wives' standpoint, you had to have a hard time with that.
Yeah, yeah. I never got any telephone calls like some of the wives did, some friends did, but it was a nasty time. And I think the drug scene and the 60s had a lot to do with it. And you have to remember, John Kennedy is the one that first got us into Vietnam.
That's right.
It wasn't Johnson or Richard Nixon. But I know when we went to Germany the second time, Heidelberg, even in Germany, they had groups of protesters that would go out to the America concerns and protest around. Of course, they couldn't get in because of the MPs. But when we came back from Berlin, my husband went to the National War College, then the Pentagon. And they couldn't even wear uniforms in the Pentagon. They had to wear civilian clothes because of the maggots on the steps spitting at the men and women coming into the Pentagon. It was unbelievable. And the change of heart since the Gulf War has been dramatically different. I mean, I read about Fort Campbell and the women's groups and the wives' Bible studies that they bring in someone, a soldier to talk to. And the programs at Walter Reed and Bethesda, the way they're taking care of the soldiers is just phenomenal.
You think that maybe people learned a little bit of a lesson of what they did that was so adverse to what we've always been used to? Usually when conflict comes about, the people in the United States, they gather together as one family. That's the way it's always been. I mean, whether it be media, entertainment, farmers, business people, everybody knows that those guys are over there protecting their freedom at a major cost. And back then, it didn't matter. But, you know, I don't know if they'll ever be able to repay all the wrongs that were done back then. They've got the virtual wall and a lot of things that do honor our GIs that paid the full cost of being in that land.
Well, Vietnam was a draft war.
Right. I know, I was one of them.
So that was my husband. Yeah. Anyway, since 9/11, well, before that, it's been a volunteer army. But I think 9/11, we were attacked like Pearl Harbor. And I think, well, when you read stories of these guys, why did you join the army? Well, I joined right after 9/11. And I think that has had a lot to do with the public's perception of why we were in Iraq, why we were in Afghanistan.
I think it was initially there was a lot more fervor about the war and people joining up and wanting to go over there and fight for their country.
It's when the casualties start coming back.
When the casualties, and then people start asking questions in the media, and then it doesn't seem like it's as strong a feeling anymore. Well, and they start questioning what we're doing.
I think the media played a big part in the problems in Vietnam. And they have tried to in Afghanistan and Iraq and Kuwait. They haven't been quite as successful because of the all-volunteer army and the spouses left behind, the children left behind. families left behind have a stronger feeling about what their sons or daughters are doing.
You know, the United States, as powerful as it is, it seems like the one weakness is that we care so much, and civilians are not a target when you're in the military.
Mm-mm.
And when you're fighting in someone's homeland and you're fighting their army, you're also fighting the civilians, but that's a no-no.
Mm-hmm.
when you're in the United States, because we do care so much. But yet we are maligned almost more than any nation. When you go into Europe and some of the places that the United States actually saved, they still don't like Americans, and I have never understood that.
I know, and the funny thing about when we were in Germany, de Gaulle kicked the Americans out of France,
mm-hmm.
and there 50,000 white crosses with Americans are buried, including one of Teddy Roosevelt's sons.
How quickly they forget.
Mm-hmm. But there's a town in France, and I can't think of the name of it, and they celebrate D-Day every year. And it was funny, when we were in Germany, we had potluck. The officers' wives mm-hmm. had potluck with the Germans, and they, in the newspaper, would say, "We don't want to know what potluck is, but we guess you bring a pot, and you're lucky if the food's good in it." But anyway, the Germans never could understand how the Americans, after they defeated Germany, mm-hmm. could turn around and do the Marshall Plan.
Yeah.
And the Berlin Airlift.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was not in the German mentality. When they took over a country, they were brutal. You think of France and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
So they never could quite understand this forgiveness, forgiving nature, and wanting to help nature. But I think that's part of the psyche of the United States.
It seems to overwhelm them when you bring that kindness back to them. Now, I was just got through reading a book recently, and about one of the officers that was in the Air Force, and he was a prisoner of war. Completely brutalized those people. If they weren't killing them, they were making their lives so miserable, starving them to death, beating them, and those type things. And when this guy, who the book was written about, when the war was over, he came home, and all he could do was hate the Japanese. He hated them, but especially one particular officer there at the prison where they stayed. He was just so unbelievably brutal and evil. He actually saved money so he could go back over there and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just ruined his life almost. He started drinking and just really couldn't bear it. But he met one of our ministers here, and he talked to him and told him how he was destroying himself mm-hmm. by thinking about destroying this other guy. And he finally got a toehold and actually went to Japan to meet this guy and to tell him that he forgave him. Now, can you believe, after what they went through, none of us can imagine
Mm-mm.
what those poor guys, I mean, we're talking about the death march at Bataan and all those other things that, but it seemed like the Japanese, and maybe the Germans at some point, from the time that they were young men, they were taught how to be cruel, and they were taught, and they were given cruel treatment themselves. So it became a way of life
mm-hmm.
for them.
I know. I had the choir at Fort Benning, Georgia, and one of my sopranos, her father was a diplomat in the Philippines,
mm-hmm.
and they were caught there when the Japanese came into the Philippines, and Alicia was a nurse,
mm-hmm.
and her husband Sandy was a prisoner of the Japanese. He'd been captured at Bataan,
mm-hmm.
and Alicia used to sneak medicine into the prisoners. Well, Sandy was on this Red Cross ship that went from Bataan to Japan that was bombed by American bombers. Even though it had the Red Cross on it, they thought it was a decoy. And when they came back, he and Alicia told me the treatment that he had gotten. It just almost turned your stomach. And he was in Japan for 3 years as a prisoner. Skin and bones when he came home.
Mm.
Lost all of his teeth from scurvy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I never will forget her telling me about that.
It just seems like here we're not taught that type of cruelty. Mm-mm. Here. We're taught to love each other and respect each other. And, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we could stay away from all of the madmen that get a hold of these things and destroy something that's really nice. And
including politicians.
Do we have to include them?
Oh, we better.
Yeah.
When they destroy the American way of life or try to destroy the Constitution,
right,
we've got a duty to interfere.
We do. But do you think that they're showing us a great example by, and there's another thing about television. We see them fight among themselves and try to destroy each other as far as their reputations, mm-hmm, and things like that and their abilities. And, you know, it's pretty hard for a voter to look through all of that and come to an intelligent decision on who they're actually going to vote for this time.
I know.
I mean, I'm not too, I don't remember this kind of
ugliness.
No. I've never seen it. And to be perfectly honest with you, from what I've seen going through there, I know you don't want to lose your vote. You really don't. But somewhere the people have got to take a stand and say, we need somebody above the politics. We need somebody above the parties. We need somebody that's looking out for us and this country. And to be perfectly honest with you, we're going to have to search hard. And I really don't want to get on a political. It's all your fault.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Now, tell me a little bit more about singing in Germany when you were singing there. When you're singing opera, do you use the language of that country when you're there, or do you use the language of the writer?
It depends on the opera house, the size of it. Heidelberg, everything was sung in German.
Mm-hmm.
You go 30 miles north to Mannheim, and it's done in the original language. Berlin, original language. Braunschweig, original language. But the smaller houses sing in German.
So you sang yours in German,
mm-hmm,
right? You're multilingual, so...
Well, bilingual.
Bilingual.
And then when I sang in Berlin at the Philharmonic, we had... the first two concerts were George Gershwin, and the Germans,
ooh,
love Gershwin.
Yes.
And so the baritone and I sang everything in English.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third concert was German operetta, mm-hmm, and then that was in German. So,
do they really follow the storyline like you were saying earlier? Because when I see them out there dancing around in Carmen and all those things, and then I hear the beautiful music, I'm not really into the players going on. I'm just loving the music.
Well, the Germans have been brought up with it.
Right.
So they know the story. Mm-hmm. So then they can enjoy the music. But Americans are not that opera-oriented,
no,
for the most part, and so they want to know what's going on.
Yeah, I can see that.
When you're raised with it, you just go with the flow.
I was raised listening to an old Philco radio, listening to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday nights.
So there you go with the flow.
There you go. And country music is loved in Europe. It really
is.
Oh,
I know it.
I mean, it competes with just about everything. And we're talking about competing. We want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And that's Mark Pirtle and John Howerton. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shebaville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 20-minute drive between Murfreesboro and Shebaville. It's on the left before you get into downtown Shebaville. And see if you can find exactly what you want, because I guarantee you they'll have it. And if you would like to call them before you leave, it's 1-800-264-6800, or pull them up on the internet, pirtlehowerton.com.
make important choices in our lives every day. You owe it to yourself to make an informed decision about where to receive cancer treatment. The Cancer Center at Middle Tennessee Medical Center offers the area's only accredited program. That means it meets the high standards set by the Commission on Cancer. We consider it a blessing to provide you with the very best care available. To locate an MTMC physician, call 284-LIFE. Why choose any place else?
Are you thinking about retirement living for yourself or a loved one? Think Adams Place in Murfreesboro. Retirement and assisted living, rehabilitation, and long-term care are available on their picturesque campus. Think it's too expensive? Think again. Adams Place Assisted Living starts as low as $100 a day. If you need a vacation, take advantage of assisted living's respite care for your loved one. Adams Place Retirement Community in Murfreesboro. Senior living at its finest.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Healthcare, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with our diva, Ellen Buckner. And, you know, you just don't really fit an opera singer.
I don't.
A diva. No.
I'm not fat enough?
No. If you sang, the game is still going to be going on. I don't understand that.
I don't know.
Isn't that odd? Now, tell me, you've got something really great coming up.
We do. We have a family concert at the First United Methodist Church, January 28th, mm-hmm. and it starts at 10 a.m. It's on mm-hmm. a Saturday. And we're dedicating the concert to families and children of Rutherford County, and we're going to be giving awards.
Great.
To the students. And some of the Murfreesboro Youth Orchestra will be playing with the Murfreesboro Symphony, mm-hmm. and we're going to do Peter and the Wolf, mm-hmm. and Mozart's Eine kleine Nachtmusik, and some...
That's easy for you to say.
Nacht. a double violin concerto by Bach, and some other songs. Jolie is getting the program together, so...
We need to have another program before that, because the public here in Rutherford County, in Murfreesboro, they need to know what's out there. And if you want a great education, how great music really can be, and when you go to the First United Methodist Church, oh, the sound there.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It is. They say that it's perfect sound at the Grand Ole Opry, at the old Ryman Auditorium. I guarantee you, this matches it. It's just absolutely. Have you sung in that venue?
No, but I want to tell you, it's great. Stephen Smith has sung there. He teaches at MTSU. Mm-hmm. His voice carries like gangbusters in there, but the female voice, unless they're up high, they don't carry that well because the ceiling is so high.
Wow.
Their sound gets lost. Now, Stephen's is penetrating and has the right volume for it, and a bass carries, mm-hmm. but the female voice and the speaking voice do not carry well in that church because of the high ceiling. So, and the mezzo and the soprano were not mic'd for our Christmas program, so their lower and middle tones didn't carry as well, but the high notes zinged out.
A strong, really strong soprano.
Oh yeah, she will. We had a Russian soprano for Lawrence Harvin's final concert, mm-hmm. and Kip was, oh gosh, I can't remember his last name, but anyway, he was a tenor, and he does a lot of Mario Lanza music. Mm-hmm. And is quite good friends with the Lanza family. And the soprano was Russian soprano, and her voice boomed out, so there was no problem. But a lighter female voice just doesn't seem to carry. It gets lost.
If you put a soprano, a really top-notch soprano, next to a great tenor, it seems like sometimes the soprano sound, maybe it's just my hearing, is a little bit stronger. But I can't think of... We were talking about Pavarotti and Caruso and some of those. I just really couldn't see anybody overwhelming the sound that they put out.
No, I can't either, off the top of my head.
But it just... Have you got any of your students that are going to be in the program?
No.
I'm surprised.
You mean this program?
Yeah.
No.
Because there's a lot of young people that are going to be in there.
Yeah, I think these are mostly instrumentalists. I'm not sure because I'm not in on the planning of it. Mm-hmm. Min Triet and Joe are. But I think they are basically instrumentalists.
Okay. Now, when you're teaching music here... Does it matter the type of voice that they have when you first start? Are you just teaching them the techniques of, you said earlier, breathing and how you let your voice flow and those things like mm-hmm. that? How do you get the full potential? How long does it take to get the full potential out of somebody? And then where do you kind of cross them out when you just finally have to tell them, I'm afraid that you're not ever going to be.
Well, a lot of it is their attitude. If they really, really, really want to get into it, then they do. I had a student who didn't want to do any classical music. She just wanted to do Broadway music. Mm-hmm. So that was okay because mm-hmm. she's done Hairspray here and she's excellent on stage. Then the tenor from Smithfield, he mm-hmm. wanted to get into serious music. So he taught himself Nessun Dorma without me knowing it and then sprung it on me. Listen, I said, Chase, you're not old enough to do that yet. But a lot of it comes through maturity.
Are there a lot of places for people who have really great trained voices, say in opera? Is that something that seems to be gaining popularity in this country? Because at one time, there were very few places that you could go to actually perform, and usually in the major cities like New York or something like that.
They have a lot of apprentice programs mm-hmm. in the San Francisco Opera, Santa Fe Opera, New York, City Center. They have a lot of apprentice programs, and this is where college graduates go, and, of course, they have to audition and get into the program, and then they start with chorus and then maybe small roles. Mm-hmm. So there are, most of the opera houses have apprentice programs for singers.
Now, people like Pavarotti, they usually perform before people who are very well acquainted with opera mm-hmm. and people who are well-to-do.
Pavarotti's father was still singing when Pavarotti died.
Oh, really?
He was in his 80s.
And Pavarotti was fairly young, but he was not a healthy person anyway.
No, he was overweight.
And then you look at some of the others that have performed over the years, and it just seems like it takes its toll on them. Do these people, do they do fairly well financially I'm sure that if someone that was of that quality were to come here to Murfreesboro, it would probably almost be a gift to us if they were
mm-hmm.
to come in here.
It would. They, of course, make recordings now being on TV. I mean, make money on being on TV and recordings.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as well paid at the opera houses. But that's the United States.
If you were to go, say, on public television and they were to come in and film someone here in Murfreesboro, would they help with the cost, or how would that work if you're able to work out a contract with somebody on a national level?
I don't know. There are a number of agents in Nashville, but they're not for opera. They're for country western or Broadway music, most of the country western. But there are some agents in Nashville.
We have got to work on getting this program out. I mean, it's what you're doing here, because some of you are all of you are working so hard to try to give this gift to everybody, but it's so difficult because everybody seems to have their own little niche and what they love. And I can tell you, if they ever go to an opera or to a performance that we have here when you're over at the First United Methodist, they'll be stuck. I mean, they will be starstruck from then on, and they will enjoy it as much as everybody else. They've just got to get out. And you don't have to dress up in a tuxedo gown
it's
or anything
informal.
Like that.
We have to get them at a young age.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's part of yours.
Yes,
that's part
of our youth program, our education program.
Are we doing it in our elementary schools like we should be?
Yes. Wilson Sharp is our principal bassoonist, and he has a program. They go out to schools all over the area, mm-hmm. and they get a grant for that because mm-hmm. it's free to the school. And so we just have to get them young.
Do we have to have tickets before people go on January the 28th at 10 a.m.?
The tickets are $5 per person, and I think they'll probably be on sale there.
I can't imagine that place not being filled.
Well, you ask about the petting zoo. The kids can come up and pick up a violin, feel it blow into a horn or a bassoon or something like that. So mm-hmm. that's an orchestra petting zoo.
Oh,
we don't
wow.
have llamas and camels there.
You guys look at things a whole lot different. Ellen, it has really been a pleasure for me.
Well, I've enjoyed
it. You are so nice, and I'm just sitting here. Just being entertained, basically.
Good.
More people need to meet you, and with all the things that are going on, wherever you're at, they need to get. How can anybody get a touch with you? Say if they have a particular talent out there, and. They have a particular talent out there, and they need somebody like you to.
Well, they can call the symphony office, 898-1862. I always say that's the year the Yankees come into Murfreesboro, 1862.
You know, my granddaddy, not my great-granddaddy, my granddaddy was born in 1864. Can you believe that? That's hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference between his age and my grandmother's age. We'll see you guys tomorrow because we have to go before Zach has a heart attack. And we will see you Monday at 2 o'clock.